saved because I was thinking of some other photos that in there. Well, let me see. I have several kind of little stories to tell you before I dig in here. One of them is this. Next time I see you, Lord willing, I'll have another book out, which will be entitled Not Many Mighty. And basically in it, I'm going to prove to you that God only uses jerks. It'll be very encouraging. Second thing, you know, some of you know, because maybe you were there, that my mom and stepdad's house was very, very badly damaged in Katrina. And when that happened, you know, I had to fly down from California and get them and take them back to live with us for 3 months and 500 days. My mom's 88, my stepdad's 92, and it was very traumatic for them. In fact, more than I guess me at age 35 could fully realize. But I was telling some of you that after they had been with us 6 weeks, my mom just woke up in the greatest mood, just so bright, and at the breakfast table she said, "I had the most wonderful revelation last night. God gave me a revelation." I said, "Wonderful, Mom, what is it?" She looked at me and said, "You're Gail." She said, "I knew I had three sons, but you know, yeah, Mom, I'm Gail." But on the 20th of January, they moved back into their house in a better one than they left. And there were 17 Calvary chapels that worked, that I know of, that worked on that house. And so you have no idea what your servanthood has done, not just for us, you know, but I mean for the whole community down there. I have for a long time been praying that there would be a Calvary chapel in Pascagoula, Mississippi. And it took kind of a wind. But it has happened, and I am just absolutely delighted. Next story. The Sunday before Valentine's Day in February, I was speaking at a church, and a presentation was made to me. A man handed me a copy of the Jesus style. It was held together by rubber bands. Every page was loose. But let me tell you how that happened. In August, the man who handed me that book called me on the phone. He was a businessman in Southern California. And he says, "I've been using your book as a kind of devotional with the men of my company that work for me who are willing to spend lunchtime, you know, having this devotional." And he says, four of them have gotten saved as a result of that. And I really, really, he said, "I can't begin to tell you what has happened in my own life personally because of the book." But he said, "My wife and I went on a cruise in Hawaii. I didn't want to go to Hawaii. I wanted to go to New Zealand. But my wife said, 'No, I just, you know, don't think we're supposed to go to New Zealand. I think we're supposed to go to Hawaii, you know.' And, well, you know, you got to follow the Holy Spirit." So they go to Hawaii, and he decides to take the Jesus style with him and reread it. But early in the morning, he's down in one of the lounges of the ship, and he's reading his Bible and has that book sitting beside him. And this 84-year-old man walks up and points at it. The Jesus says, "What's that?" "He wants a book about Jesus." "Jesus. I hate Christians. Hated Christians all my life." this guy says, well, maybe you don't understand Jesus. Take the book, read it. Oh, no, I'm 84 years old. I ain't got time to read any books. He said, I sold all that I have in order to pay to bring up my whole family on this cruise to say goodbye to them because the doctor told me I only had a few weeks left to live. And he said, and I'm an alcoholic. I plan to get so drunk I won't even know I'm on this ship. And this businessman said, well, I can't expect you to read the book, but I tell you what, can I read it to you? This old man said, I reckon that won't hurt anything. So he sat down, and in 4 mornings, that man read the entire book to this guy. Well, this 84-year-old Christian hater becomes a Jesus lover. On the way home, on the plane, it's a 5-hour flight from there back to Los Angeles, although most of the family was coming to Georgia. His son in his 50s was sitting beside him and said, Dad, what is going on? What are you talking about? What's up? What do you mean? The son said, Dad, you're not drunk. And you haven't been drunk on this whole trip. What is going on? And his dad reached into his pack and handed him Jesus style, said, read it for yourself. Read the highlighted parts. By the time they reached Los Angeles, this son of his had also decided this was the Jesus that he wanted to follow. 3 days after they got home, the old man died. On the day that he died, 2 of his grandsons accepted the Lord. This guy, the businessman, had, in talking to some of the family, encouraged them to get involved with a Calvary Chapel if they could find one wherever they lived. Some of them live here in Georgia. Well, let me just shorten the whole thing. As of Valentine's Day, 47 members of that family have come to know the Lord off of that one copy. And they sent it back to this man and said, we don't need it anymore. They said, we have our own copies now. So that's one of my treasures that I have at my house. I laugh because I know that if we ever get burglarized, he won't take the most valuable thing. He will have no clue as to what is the most valuable items in my house, you know. So I have it where I can look at it and think, wow, thank you, Jesus. One other little story. One of the sons wanted to come to that service that I was in, but he couldn't because his company had given him a promotion and he had to work that evening. He had worked for this company for 20 years and never had gotten a promotion until he became a Christian, and his language got changed because they couldn't trust him with customers. His language was so bad. But now his language is cleaned up, and he finally gets a promotion, you know, and I'm thinking, all right, I like that. Well, now, go with me to Psalm 139. You know, most of the world isn't really happy with God. I think it's probably partly explained in one of my favorite comic strips called Calvin and Hobbes, which they don't write anymore, but they're running some of the old ones, you know. And Calvin, this little boy, has a pet stuffed tiger whom his imagination makes real. And that's Hobbes. And they're sitting on a tree limb one day, and Calvin says to Hobbes, I have come to a great philosophical understanding. Hobbes says, really? Yes. I know that there's a God. Really? How do you know? because there's somebody out there trying to get me. So there must be a God, you know. And most of the people feel that way, you know. Oh, yeah, God's just basically out to get me. Because as our worship leader was quoting, you know, we've been alienated from God because of what God has done, no, because of our own evil actions. And it's a funny thing how that alienates us. I tell the story, I'm sure I've told you. When we come back east from Southern California, it's usually on Highway 10, Interstate 10, a good portion of which, far too much of which, goes through Texas. And you get out on those lonely roads, you know, and you don't want people to run over you, so you get a little faster. You set it so that you don't get run over. But once as I was coming back not too far from El Paso, I didn't notice that the trucks had slowed way down. So I zoomed on around them, and in the rearview mirror, there it is, the hated, oh, man. So I pulled over, and the ranger got out and walked up to my car. Now, by the time he got to my car, I was mad at him. I wanted to say to him, you know, if you guys were out catching criminals like you're supposed to, you wouldn't be stopping people like me who merely broke the law. Now, I didn't say that. But I thought it, you know. And then I thought, well, you know, isn't that just like the world? You know, I was the one at fault, but I got mad at him. Because he caught me. And we all, not all of us, but the world, as you know, lives in constant fear that they're going to get a comeuppance from God. There will come the point when he's going to tell. In fact, if you want to create some chaos where you work, if you have a job. You may be a pastor, I know, but... I love that, you know, when people say, boy, that's a great job. You only have to work for an hour on Sunday. But you can go up to your coworkers and just say to each of them as they come in, what you've been hiding for years is going to be revealed today. They'll leave screaming. But things change about that if you really know what God is like. If you really know what God is like, this is a kind of a wonderful thought. And if you know what God is like, and then you just revel in His love, man, it can kind of blow all your fuses. Now, I happen to have the most wonderful wife in the world. She has stuck with me for more than 48 years. And the thing, you know, she's the greatest wife that one could have because she just really thinks I'm tops. You know? But sometimes, to be honest with you, this is kind of intimate, forgive me, but sometimes I look at her and I just love her so much I cannot express it with simple English, you know. You run out of words sometimes. And I'm thinking, you know, I wish that I could speak in tongues to you so you could, you know, understand it. Because that's the beautiful thing about speaking in tongues. And I don't know about you, but I get the same way with God. There are times that I think I'm going to explode. I just can't handle this anymore. God, you're too good. You're just too good. And I don't know how to tell you that. Too good seems so mundane, doesn't it? You know, you're great, God. Well, yeah, is that the best you can do, Erwin? Yeah, I'm afraid so. But we join a guy named David who is having one of these times with God when it's almost like, I can't take this anymore. It's too much. And he says some things in this passage that lets you know that he really knows what God is like. Now, if you go back over to Psalm 103, you hear him expressing it in ways that that any of you who've heard me much around here know you're going to hear this again, like tonight. He knew that God was compassionate, gracious, slow to anger, abounding in mercy and faithfulness, mercy to thousands, forgiving wickedness, forgiving rebellion, forgiving sin. He knew that, and he says this, he quotes this, because he's beside himself in Psalm 103. But in Psalm 139, I love the way he starts this, because it's kind of threatening if you don't know what God is like. It says, oh Lord, you see, let me read it how the world might. Oh Lord, you have, oh my, you've searched me and known me. Oh. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought afar off. Oh, no. You comprehend my path and my lying down. Oh, and are acquainted with all my ways. Ay, 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 ay. There's not a word on my tongue, but behold, oh Lord, you know it all together. Have you ever been around someone and boy, they're cussing the blue streak, and then they find out that you're a pastor? Isn't it amazing what happens? I mean, they're just as sinful as ever, but they straighten up. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to say that in front of you, you know. But you see, God hears the whole thing. See, it's not, they just don't understand that, you know. But it's scary to them. You know it all together. There's not a word on my tongue. But behold, oh God, you know it all together. See, now that's the way the world looks at it. But David is not looking at it that way at all. When he knows what God is like, this thought so excites him, he can hardly stand it. And he's thinking, whoa, God, this is great. You've searched me and you know me. Wow. Well, you know when I sit down. You know when I get up. You understand my thoughts afar off. See, the biggest problem we tend to have, well, I don't know if it's the biggest problem. I don't know what's my biggest problem. But you ever been misunderstood, you know? And you have to say, no, that's not what I was thinking. I may have said it wrong, but it wasn't what I was thinking. If you've been married very long, But you see, God understands. He can listen to our thoughts far off, and yet it isn't like, oh, I didn't understand that. Would you try that thought one more time? No, God understands. He sees us in ways no one can, and He comprehends. Isn't that great? He comprehends my path and my lying down. And Lord, you're acquainted with all my ways. Boy, isn't this great? For there's not a word on my tongue, but behold, Lord, you know it all together. And here now, we become acquainted with a little bit of grace that that David is understanding. And he says, and you've hedged me behind and before. In other words, knowing me, you're protecting me. Isn't that great? You've hedged me behind and before. I don't know if any of you ever pay any attention to politics and politicians, but one thing they're good at is attempting to hedge themselves. You never get straight answers from a politician, you know. And even if they are caught with the gun in their hands, they say, I haven't done anything wrong. And I really hate it when they say, I haven't done anything that you wouldn't do. I could sue you for that. That's slander, you know. But they try their best to cover themselves, and we laugh at it because we know, you know, for a long time there were these bumper stickers. I don't know quite why they're, but just said guilty. That's all it said. It was guilty. You know, maybe that's just looking at the world. The world knows we're guilty, but maybe that was a statement to politicians: guilty, buddy, you're guilty. That's all it is. Guilty. And so we know they are, and we laugh at their attempts to hedge themselves. But isn't this great that God, knowing who we are, knowing our thoughts from afar off, listening to our tongues, just loves us so much, he says, oh, that's a precious one. I'm going to protect him. I'm going to hedge him, you know, there. And front and back, this is incredible. In fact, he gets beside himself almost here. He says, you've laid your hand upon me. Now, that doesn't mean karate chop hand. I thought when I was a kid that God was the director of a band of angels especially trained in karate, and they'd assigned two to me. And just waiting for one bad thought. Gotcha, buddy. That was from God. But he's not that way. When he lays his hand upon us, this is a gentle, this is a precious, this is a caring kind of thing that would happen if you just want to touch a baby, because you just look at him and you think, what a remarkable thing you are. And so he says, you've laid your hand upon me. This is incredible. Oh, and he says, such knowledge is too wonderful for me. I can't handle this. It's high. I cannot attain it. It's beyond my best thinking that, God, you would be this way. Wow, what an incredible God you are. I know these things, and I'm still alive. You've heard the statement, you know, when you talk to someone who works in some government position and you ask them, well, what do you do? And they say, well, if I tell you, I'll have to kill you. You know? I was flying to Australia once, and sitting next to me was a nice-looking guy, and we got into a discussion, and I said, what do you do? He said, well, I work for the Air Force. I said, oh, you're in the Air Force. No, I work for the Air Force. Oh, and you're going to Australia? Yeah. Well, where? Alice Springs. I said, Alice Springs? That's in the middle. You can't get any further away from anywhere than there. He said, that's right. And I said, and this was quite a while ago, before the first Gulf War. I says, does this have anything to do with the Gulf War thing? Mm-hmm. I sat there for a second. I said, is that all you're going to tell me? Mm-hmm. You know? And there are some things that I realize I'm not going to figure things out. I have such a simple mind. I only know simple things. And some things are too high for me. And I tried to learn something complicated once, but it still flashes noon at me all the time, you know. Now, do you ever get to the point that you just kind of love God so much that you want to burst into song? Basically, my family doesn't mind my doing that as long as I'm alone. But it happens here with David. He sort of bursts into song in a way as he sees how great God is and how loving he is. And if you will permit me, this will be a moment of test for all of us. But in Philadelphia, they have put the next words to song. And I happen to love this. And they sing it, and it just touches me so much because I know where it's coming from. And it goes like this. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. I love that song. Thank you. And I can almost hear David, this great, sweet singing voice, just breaking into song with that. Well, you know, God, you're kind of everywhere, aren't you? And I don't have to worry that maybe I'm outside the place where you can find me and care for me. In fact, no matter where I go, I can't run. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? There are some who, oh, man, I can remember when I was a kid, there were places that, they just told me, you can go there if you want to, but God is not going to go there with you. Yeah. And I didn't go there. But I have a different understanding of that now, because I've discovered that God is with me, whether I feel like He's there or not, or whether my theology will even admit that He's there or not. He just is there. Where can I go? Where can I flee? He's the world's most wonderful super glue, and I'm glad. The one time when it seemed that He who had held this world together wasn't holding it together, if you recall, earthquakes happened. The world began to fall apart as He now was no longer living. And thank God He was able to pull it back together for us, because He's holding it together and He's doing this for us. Incredible. And so David bursts into song, and when he finishes that, he even says this, if I say, oh, surely the darkness shall fall on me, well, even the night will be light around me. See, because of who God is, there's just no such thing as darkness. I can be afraid if I want to, though, that the darkness is coming, man. Maybe when you were a kid, you were afraid that there were monsters under your bed. Or maybe you knew that since we come from dust and go back to dust, that someone was either coming or going under there. And we didn't want anybody to turn off the lights, because we knew that monsters came out from under the bed when the lights were off. But you know, this is the most wonderful, restful thing, when you know what your God is like, and that you know, as one of our songs said, that He wraps Himself in light, and darkness tries to hide and trembles at His voice. And you realize that when the lights are turned on, darkness can't do one thing about it. One of my favorite stories about Chuck Smith, when the Jesus movement happened, of course, and here were kids getting saved who did not look like they were really fit members of the kingdom of God. And so at a certain denomination's convention where they invited him to speak, and he was with some pastors, and they wanted to ask him questions, and they said, we assume, Pastor Smith, that when these, like, you know, Jesus movement people come in out of all that free sex and drugs and so forth, that you really preach against that, and you really come down on that pretty hard. And Chuck says, no, I don't do that. You don't? Well, what do you do? He says, well, I've learned that you can take a baseball bat and beat the darkness all you want, and it ain't going anywhere. He says, I just turn on the light switch. I just teach him about the light, you know. And he says, it takes care of everything. And this is the way it is. When you realize who your God is, and He is so much on your side, you can't even begin to understand all of it. Then you think, when I begin to think that I'm going into darkness, the fact of the matter is you actually turn the darkness into the light. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from you. Gotcha. But the night shines as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to you. That's comforting, isn't it? Whenever we feel like, oh man, what am I going to do? It's getting dark. For you formed my inward parts. Wow. Now, isn't that nice? Wow, God. You made me. You gave me this stomach. And you covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. I do not understand anyone who would want to believe in evolution. I just can't handle that. The complexity of you. See, now this is one of the things that you realize if you mess with computers much is, any of you guys with computers, if you'd ever do any programming, you understand G-I-G-O, garbage in, garbage out. And a computer's a dumb machine. You have to tell it every little tiny thing. It can't think. If you wanted to copy the movement of your hand, There are thousands of instructions that have to go into just one little old movement like that. And a guy can spend his life just about just programming at one hand to move like that, you know. And he'll feel so good. Did you see what I did? I programmed that hand to move. And when you look around, you see, in one glimpse, I see all of you. And I think we never forget all of that. It's in there. It just, you know, have trouble getting it out. But it's there. And I can make quick decisions about this. I mean, very quickly, if one of you just stood up suddenly and had a shotgun, I'd make a very quick decision. They can't get them to do that. This is too incredible to take in literally trillions of things all at once with just one pair of eyes, and your brain is making all of these judgments about it and so forth. In fact, that's how I came up with Not Many Mighty. I just sort of made a judgment.
It's in the Bible, you know.
And if a person has an IQ of about 4, he's smarter than any computer. If you can walk and chew gum at the same time, they don't have a computer that can do that well, folks. This is incredible, see. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. And how to figure out how that can evolve is just like, come on, give me a break. There are so many processes in you that can't work until they're complete. There's no interim thing. I mean, just your eyes. I mean, why? How, yeah, gradually over millions of years. I was blind up till a certain point, you know, and then finally, well, lo and behold, I got eyelids. In the animal world, you know, there's a spider that weaves a diving bell so it can go out in the water and go down and get something and come back up, you know. Do you realize that had to work right the first time? I mean, there was no whoops back to the drawing board. No, it would be whoops back to the single cell, you see. And that's simple. But there are trillions are little processes in your body that cannot have an interim. They only work when they're fully complete. I kind of feel like maybe David understood that. And he thinks, wow, you formed my inward parts. And it's amazing how they work. Wow. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And then he just is falling so much in love with God as he does this. He says, I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works. Well, that's what I said when I first met my wife. Marvelous are your works, God. And that my soul knows very well, the real me, this innermost me, you know, soul maybe is mind, but heart, you know, is our innermost being. But this that I am knows very well, because my frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed, and in your book they were all written. You know, you took a look at me and you thought, okay, let's write some things down for this guy. The days were fashioned for me when as yet there were no days or none of them. How precious also are your thoughts to me, O God. Now, most people don't believe that unless they know what God is like. I've discovered even most Christians feel that when their name comes up in heaven, you can see God's jaws tighten. And he says, who let him in? I used to think that until I found out what God was really like. And the fact is, folks, I think when our name comes up in heaven, God smiles and goes, oh man, that's one of mine. This is great. You know, and he isn't looking at you like, all right, now I expected you to do better. Because he knew how you were going to do. When he bought you, please keep in mind that you came with a sticker on you that said, as is. You were a collection of parts in a gunny sack. Not everybody knows what a gunny sack is anymore. And they weren't all parts from the same year. And so when God chose you, he knew what he was getting. He knew that in a horse trade, he lost. And yet, this is the thing that makes him so glorious, because he can take those parts and be glorified with it, you see. Do you ever get the, don't raise your hands here, but you know, I couldn't believe that he said, made us raise our hands if we'd ever been arrested. Did you see that this morning? Your church is, oh. I got to tell you this story before I leave this thought. I was teaching at another pastor's conference, and a message came that so-and-so had to leave because his dad was dying, and his dad was not saved. Would you please pray for him, because he wanted to get there and final witness? So we prayed, but before I did, I said, it may be that some of you here have a dad that is unsaved, and you'd like for us to include him in this prayer. And one of the pastors had brought his 9-year-old son with him, and the son... I loved it, you know. He's got some explaining to do. But we have this tendency to think that God's thoughts for us are just a little bit put out with us, you know, and that we're on probation. I'll give you another day, but you better be better when I come back, you know. When I was young, my parents believed in the laying on of hands and hairbrushes, and the worst thing in the world was a switch, because I had to go cut my own. But when the time came for the application of the Board of Education to the seat of learning, I can remember this. I made promises. Boy, did I make promises. Never, ever again will I even think of doing anything like this. Trust me. And sometimes, you know, they believed that, and I would go scot-free. But then I knew I'm going to get it, because I couldn't keep from doing things. There's times when I would even say to some of my friends, it's time for me to go home and get my whipping. Because I knew it was coming, you know. I deserved it. That's why the Chinese have a wonderful little proverb that says, whip a child at the end of the day. If you don't know why, he does. But the fact of the matter is, when God thinks of you, the thoughts are precious. And he says, my thoughts for you are good. You know that. And how great is the sum of them. Oh, David has understood what God is like, and it's overwhelming. If I should count them, they would be more in number than the sand. When I'm awake, oh, think of it, I'm still with you. You know, I heard a guy once, it was a Calvary pastor actually, trying to figure this out mathematically. If his thoughts for us are like the sand, how many thoughts might that be? And I'm a lump of a mathematician. I was paying attention. And he came, he was doing it right. And he came to what was, I thought, a good conclusion. It might have been a bit of an underestimate. And he said, he came to the conclusion that God had 7 good thoughts per second for each of us. Wow, I can't even think 7 thoughts in a second. But isn't this amazing? Even as I'm speaking to you, do you realize God is thinking? He doesn't quit thinking when I start speaking. I do. He doesn't. And even as I'm speaking to you, he's thinking these thoughts. Good thoughts, you know. 7, 14, 21, 28, 35, 42, 49, 56. And this goes on and on. But you see, the thing is, we have this tendency not to think that this is the way it is with God. We have the tendency to think that he has kind of a meter that's constantly going brat, brat, brat on us. When the fact is, folks, please hear this. David got overwhelmed with it. He's crazy about you. He's crazy about you. And you know what? Even if you're not too crazy about him, he's still crazy about you. And he just wants you to love him. That's about it. You know, love him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And I think it automatically works out then that you love your neighbor as yourself, which is just like that. But now, and I love this, David was so human. Isn't that wonderful? I love the fact that here was a guy with whom every one of us can identify out of his sheer humanity, because he now, in seeing the incredible greatness of God, pulls the carnal thing and sees what it's like on the other side, and listen. Oh, that you should slay the wicked, oh God. Yeah. Depart from me, therefore, you bloodthirsty men.